Hello everyone, I'm joined today by my colleague Karen Dolly, and we're talking about the Madlanga Commission. Now, if you haven't been following the headlines, this isn't just another inquiry. This is the moment that the dam finally broke on South Africa's criminal justice system, and it all started back in July when KZN police boss Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi stood up, gave a press conference, and said out loud what many had been whispering and speaking about for many years, that a massive drug cartel hasn't just entered the room, it has infiltrated South Africa's criminal justice system, politics, and even private security. We're talking about allegations of the cartel owning high-ranking cops, pulling the strings in parliament, and even having private security firms on their payroll. So the commission's on a break at the moment, and I'd like to unpack with Karen, who's been writing extensively about this and also about the cartels and in various books and publications. So Karen, you've been covering the Madlanga Commission for weeks now. What exactly is it, and why did President Ramaphosa establish this specifically in 2025?
Thanks, Marianne. So as you mentioned, in July 2025, KwaZulu-Natal's police boss, Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi, basically went public with a series of accusations, and the crux of those accusations was that a drug cartel has infiltrated the criminal justice sector. So President Ramaphosa instituted the commission to investigate those accusations, not just about the drug cartel, but broader infiltration of law enforcement by criminals. And that's what we've been hearing about, all that and sundry.
As you said earlier, it is something people have been speaking about, writing about for quite some time, but the dots are finally being joined. Mkhwanazi revealed the existence of the new Big Five. Who are they, or what are they?
So he has alleged, and along with other certain police officers, they've alleged that the Big Five is a cartel, and it consists of different criminal groupings. And we're talking about criminals or gangsters, whatever you wish, who commit crimes from ATM bombings, cash in transit heists, and tender fraud, tender manipulation, to drug trafficking. And now I can't remember the question.
Let's not forget also assassinations and attempted self-assassination. So it is a very vast terrain. But we've seen some very big brass mentioned, eh? Even the police minister and high-ranking generals. How deep is this cartel's infiltration, and where does it go?
So interestingly, we know that the accusations are that this cartel exists. There are some police officers who deny that it exists or who claim not to know about it. So in terms of how deep it goes, we're not even sure if the cartel is there for sure. However, the accusations we've heard, the accusations we are still going to hear, they are so extensive. They're almost exhaustingly extensive, and they do go from top to bottom. So, I mean, we've even got, as we're well aware, we've got our National Police Commissioner, who's since been suspended, facing criminal charges alongside Vusimuzi Cat Matlala. And he, Matlala, has been accused of being a Big Five cartel member. So you can see it sort of goes and expands and shrinks in all directions. We've also got the police minister who was sidelined since Umtunu, because he's also being accused of having sort of dodgy dealings with Cat Matlala. So, yeah.
Karen, Mkhwanazi made the very, very startling revelation that, in fact, there was a kind of parallel union buildings, and that was former taxi boss Msibi's farm. Old Msibi had a farm, and that cartel members would all meet there. And since his death, and of course, very prominent politicians and policemen and various others were regularly seen at this farm. But since his death, it appears that there's been a kind of conflict, turf conflict about who's going to take over. And this sort of brings us then to the foot soldiers of the story and a fixer like Vusimuzi Cat Matlala. He was close to Msibi. But where does he fit in, if we can place him, in the bigger picture?
So he's almost like a node. If you look at him, if you sort of zoom out, look at him. He's facing criminal charges at the moment in connection with a police healthcare tender that was dubiously awarded. Okay. In that case, he's facing charges alongside 12 senior police officers as well as the suspended police commissioner. Okay, so that puts him in sort of a top-tier bracket of criminality or alleged criminality. And if we look on the other side, the accusations he faces, and he hasn't necessarily been criminally charged with these, is that he is a Big Five cartel member. It's interesting that KwaZulu-Natal's police head, Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi, described him as a smaller fish in a big pond. So he's not necessarily a top-tier drug trafficking accused, but he is there lower down in the hierarchy. He's also been accused of street-level violence, for example, attempted murder. So it really is a hinge connecting all these different types of alleged criminality, from, like I said, from the top highest-ranking police officer to what's actually playing out or has been playing out on the ground.
And at this point, there is no indication whether he might turn state witness or not, but he seems to be lower enough, down enough on the chain to maybe pull that off. But we'll have to wait and see with that. Now, we need to get to the cocaine, because there seems to be tons and kilograms of it, bricks of it everywhere. So just give us a sort of rundown on the cocaine cases or the cocaine mystery and how that relates back to everything at Madlanga.
So this is something I've been focusing on because, I mean, cocaine simply can't just go missing, and that actually has happened. In June 2021, and it's going to get a bit confusing, so bear with me. June 2021, cocaine was intercepted in Isipingo, which is in KwaZulu-Natal, okay? That consignment was taken to the Port Shepstone building, the Hawks Port Shepstone offices, which should never have been taken. So we've heard in the Madlanga Commission that this building had absolutely poor security. It was decided previously that exhibits of this nature shouldn't be stored there, but it was. And several months after it was intercepted, it was stolen from the building. Thieves got in, they broke open a chain in a hardware or on premises of a hardware store. They got through there onto the property of the Hawks building, broke open windows, and they knew exactly where to find the walk-in safe the cocaine was stored. And they also knew exactly how to open it. And we've heard that they would have needed special skills or expertise to maneuver that lock open. So that's the one incident. So that
unless
cocaine
they had
is...
a key. Unless they had a key, then it would have maneuvered quite easily.
Well, there was powder, etc., to suggest it was zipped open. So yeah, that cocaine, according to Khantle Mkunazi, ended up in Johannesburg, where it was stolen from. In other words, it didn't end up with the owners or whoever it should have gone to. And according to him, that's contributed to some murders in Gauteng. So, for example, the 2022 murder of DJ Somebody, his real name is Opa Sifoka. His family, though, came out strongly in a statement saying, actually, no, that is a smear campaign. So that's the one cocaine saga.
I just wanted to ask a question here about the involvement of DJs and the music industry, because they feature quite prominently in a lot of the violence. And, you know, those of us who've consumed some of the albums that have been released by people like AKA and others sort of didn't see this side of their lives and how they became involved. But this is also still evolving in other court cases where people are being charged.
Absolutely. And we can't say for certain they have been involved in anything underhanded at this point, because that hasn't actually come out, or there's nothing to suggest that so far, aside from the fact that they've been targeted in fatal shootings, which is horrible. Yeah, and it really bridges that gap between what we perceive as entertainment and reality.
Yeah, and kind of the an industry which sort of gets infiltrated at all points. But the cocaine theft, of course, sounds like an inside job. Has anything come out about who on the inside?
So we've heard from several police officers that they suspect it was an inside job. And I think that, I mean, if someone had broken into the exact specific room, knowing how to get in there, we can understand why that sentiment exists.
You're talking about the one that was stolen from the Port Shepstone thing. Right. You know, they've gone back to that original sort of stealing, which was an inside job. But there was another incident as well. So we're going to the July 2021 consignment now. There's another one that's intercepted in Joburg or Ayrton in an industrial area. That's another cocaine sort of interception.
Absolutely. So for the Port Shepstone case, just to conclude that, the Port Shepstone case, there were no arrests. We're still waiting to see what happens. We're still waiting to hear if police officers will be held to account for that. And I mean, that was more than 200 million rands worth of cocaine that disappeared from a Hawks building in a province where the harbour is known to attract transnational drug traffickers. So just to emphasize how serious this case is. Also, the Hawks are priority crime-fighting police officers. They are priority crime fighters. Therefore, thieves targeted the building of priority crime fighters, and that building had poor security. And that is sort of a microcosm of this broader picture we're seeing. And also, the policing that we are being, I don't want to say being served, but the policing that is being meted out is coming from buildings which don't have security. The very people relied on to protect us don't have proper security. With the Aeroton cocaine that you mentioned, that was July 2021. That was 286 million rands worth of cocaine that was intercepted at a depot in Aeroton. And what
just before you go on, can you give us an idea of what does that look like in terms of if we passed a truck on the highway? Is it like a very big hauler truck? Small? I mean, what does that look like in terms of quantity of cocaine bricks?
So most of this cocaine is being transported inside containers. So you'll see a big truck with a container. You won't know what's in there. In that container, if you start digging around, or even if you just open it, I don't know. Yeah, you'll probably see black canvas bags or bags wrapped in plastic. Because remember, these consignments come on ships. So you try to prevent moisture from getting in. Or I shouldn't say you. The drug traffickers try to prevent moisture from getting in. So they come very well packaged and wrapped.
Now, in that incident at Aeroton, the first cop on the scene, he testified to the Madlanga Commission. What did he say about when he got there? What happened?
I mean, astounding and not necessarily in a good way to have heard what happened. He says that he was there with an associate, a traffic officer who told him about this, and they stopped the truck. And they asked if it could be opened to be searched, and it was opened, and these bags started falling out. And what this police officer then went on to testify is quite unfathomable, because he says that he started packing these parcels or bricks of cocaine onto the back of an open buggy, which he'd arrived at the scene in. And he openly acknowledged that he contaminated the crime scene. He wasn't wearing gloves. The cocaine wasn't put into evidence bags. And it was put to him during the commission's proceedings that this looks like the cocaine was placed onto that buggy with the intention to get it away from the scene before other police officers arrived. He's denied that.
He's been quite interesting to watch because, strangely enough, he comes across as kind of like one of those like untrained cops. And, you know, if that is the case, then, you know, there's like serious gaps in how to manage a crime scene. But we'll see what the commission finds about his testimony. But he sort of did say that, like, I just thought that's what I needed to do kind of thing.
Absolutely. And I don't know if you recall Justice Madlanga actually pointing out that, and I quote, there wasn't a snowball's chance in hell.
Yeah.
That he knew what he was doing. It was quite a stand-up quote. Yeah.
So maybe he's a hero in a way because he, you know, he kind of was the catalyst for this. So were there any arrests?
There were four arrests. There was a court case. The charges were withdrawn. I've since heard that those may be reinstated, but I'm sure we'll actually see based on what's emerged from the Madlanga Commission. What happens next?
So the other two suspects are very just people connected to the, I suppose, the smugglers or the couriers?
So the other two suspects, aside from the person involved in traffic, etc., and this police officer, the other two are a police officer, as well as a businessman. And the traffic officer says the businessman tipped him, or was his informant, something to that effect. In terms of the alleged connections or one's alleged connections to a cartel or drug traffickers, it has surfaced in the commission that there were messages that were intercepted and the messages suggest a connection between an individual and those who were sort of hands-on trafficking the cocaine.
Because this intercepted message or kind of knowledge later comes into play when another bunch of cops arrive. So what then happened to this innocent cocaine, if we can call it that?
The Aeroton cocaine suffered a similar fate, in a sense, to the Port Shepston cocaine. So the Aeroton cocaine was first taken to a police station in Boysons. We heard from the commission that the officer in charge of that police station was very anxious about having such a high-value consignment there. It was then moved to the police college, and then it went to the forensic science laboratory. Now, this is really important because we've also heard from the commission, and you can find this information on other government websites, etc., that after a week at a police station, that's like the maximum amount of time the cocaine's meant to be there, it should go to a forensic science laboratory. Okay, but because of limited space, we've heard that often these mass consignments or consignments aren't sent to the lab immediately or within that specified time frame. Anyway, the Edgerton cocaine did end up in a forensic science laboratory, and 3 years after it was intercepted, a police officer wanted to go and see it. A lot of investigations into what actually went down in Edgerton, and he was told, well, actually, we can't find the whole consignment. The interception was in 2021. The officer queried about this in 2024. And early 2025, he found out that 55 million rands worth of that cocaine was no longer in the forensic science laboratory.
Where did this cocaine come from? From the two busts? Or, you know, from which country in the world? What are the routes that involve South Africa and this distribution here?
So we've heard from police officers testifying at the Madlanga Commission that these two consignments very likely, they came from Brazil. And more specifically, we've heard Port of Santos. Now, in a story I did quite a few years ago, before any of this happened, the Hawks actually said the Port of Santos route to South Africa has been on their radar for nearly something like 2 decades, which is, I mean, so it's a known problematic route.
How is it transported? What is the method of transport generally?
So I'm not sure what happens in Brazil. From what I've read about Brazil, lots of trucks have been intercepted there. Trucks on the way to the harbor, etc. So again, we've got containers, shipments, etc. Anyway, so the container gets to the harbor. The cocaine may be stuck in beforehand or at the harbor itself, and it's shipped to South Africa. And then it gets to Durban Harbor in this case. And then from there, it's trucked to, in the case of what General Mkhwanazi said, it's trucked to Gauteng.
You mentioned that there was this guy called Gilberto Aparecido. I don't know how you pronounce his surname, Dos Santos, or his middle name. Tell us a bit about him. He has a connection in South Africa.
So Gilberto Aparecido Dos Santos was also known as Fuminho, which means, I think it's little smoke or little fire. He headed Primaro Commando de Capital, otherwise known as First Capital Command. It's one of the biggest sort of gangs, mafia groupings, cartels in Brazil. And he was actually in Johannesburg. He was traced to Johannesburg quite a few years ago. And I think he traveled from Johannesburg to Mozambique, where he was arrested. But that suggests that First Capital Command has connections in South Africa. What he was doing in Johannesburg, I still don't know. I'd love to know if anybody out there knows.
Where is he at present, incarcerated in Mozambique?
So he was actually sent back to Brazil and jailed there. So we assume he's still in jail. The last time I checked, he was.
We assume. You never know. What now with the Madlanga Commission? It's on a break until May 2026. What's happening in between?
So it's on a break so that they can sort of finalize what is their second interim report, and that should be with the president by the 29th of May, and then the hearings resume again on the 1st of June. So we will probably be hearing, if not more about some weird drug skullduggery, I'm certain we'll be hearing about accusations among police officers. And then those hearings are set to go on until about August, because a final report based on the concluded set of hearings is meant to be handed over by the 31st of August.
Of course, there have been a lot of arrests as a result of the testing that's been given at Madlanga, and many people are surprised by this. Just give our readers and our viewers a kind of idea of how is this team working. Is there a specialized team that works with the Madlanga Commission and SAPS and the NPA and IDAC? Because people are just being swept up as we go.
So there's a recommendations team that is basically acting on what has emerged from the Madlanga Commission and recommendations that have already been made. So what we're seeing is, as the hearing continues, there is action in terms of what has already emerged and what's emerging around that. So we're almost seeing the hearing play out in real time along with the arrests that are either directly or indirectly connected to it, which is quite overwhelming in a sense, because it feels like every week there have been arrests.
It is also unprecedented. I don't think we can say that any other commission in South Africa, including Zondo Commission, and I can name you many that over the years we've watched live, have resulted in such instant arrests and chargings. It's just unprecedented. This is really is a complete, you know, moment in South Africa's history.
Absolutely. I mean, we are seeing arrests almost in real time. We are hearing accusations. I mean, we are hearing mounds and mounds of accusations. We are seeing criminal charges sort of taking shape, court cases starting to develop. And I think I almost feel that for a few years before all this, there was some sort of, you know, you hear about factions in policing, but they don't really exist. It's the media hyping it up. I think at this point, we can undeniably say we can finally cleanly see the fractures running through the South African police service and other law enforcing structures in South Africa.
And this is stuff that, you know, you yourself and many other journalists and myself have been sort of aware of ourselves. I was just saying that this was in our heads and now it's out in public, which really is, you know, very satisfying in many ways, because what we thought was happening is indeed happening. I mean, the top echelons of SAPS, we've lost that leadership. Your feelings about the new acting commissioner and whether this is really a turning point for SAPS, with Mkhwanazi there as well, reinstated for a second term.
So I mean, Marianne, we're journalists, so I feel like optimism isn't really coursing through our veins. But I mean, there's a lot of hope. Things are changing. Let us hope, and I use that word with a lot of energy, but let us hope that it's not cosmetic change. Let us hope that it's actually going to go much further and legitimately start changing the culture of policing.
Well, because certainly the service that the ordinary members give often, I've had experience recently, is excellent. The young people have been recruited, they're being trained, they're professional. So this is, I think, a hangover from a very long past. It's a very important commission as you've been covering it. And many, many South Africans are completely addicted to it. So that's also very important for democracy and accountability, so that these questions are answered and the people sort of, like Brown Mokgosi, realize this is not just a cosmetic thing, it's happening. And then, of course, our prosecutors, how interesting they've been, the panel, the commissioners. This has all, I think, been a traumatic but really quite exhilarating time for South Africa. So are we gonna expect the report soon, Karen? And what are you going to just continue digging in the meantime?
I feel like I'm flailing at the moment, but absolutely. And don't forget that this is the Madlanga Commission of Inquiry. We've also had Parliament's ad hoc committee that's investigating the same accusations. So it's exactly what you said, amplified. It really is unprecedented in South Africa.
Absolutely. And something to, I think, be welcomed. And once again, I mean, we see the convictions. So we hope that you will come away from our little power chat here a little bit more kind of clued up with just a general overview of what this commission means, and for daily updates and all sorts of tissues that get stuck on heads, you know, it's all over the place. So thank you very much for tuning in, and we'll see you shortly.